Welcome to Deeper Insights, a podcast produced by Construction and Demolition Recycling Magazine that takes you deeper into the stories featured on our covers. We hear the voices of the leaders of demo firms, aggregate recyclers, and mixed C&D recyclers as they share their stories of growth, challenges, and successes, and hopes for the future. We'll learn about the history of the industry, its people, and the new technology that will lead it to greater heights.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Shelley Mann. I'm the managing editor of Construction and Demolition Recycling Magazine. Today, we are speaking with Ron Tazelar and Dan Redman from Taz Recycling in Chicago, Illinois. Good morning. I was hoping you could get started by just giving us an introduction and a broad level overview of the company.
Well, I'll start. Ron Tazelar is my father and I started the business right out of high school in 1998. And we were a full service garbage company minus a landfill and or transfer station, just a collection company. And then in 2002, we sold all of our garbage and started focusing on construction and demolition and debris only and roll off dumpsters. And then if you fast forward to 2010, we had an opportunity to acquire our first C&D recycling facility, which was a very primitive ground sort facility, and continued to grow that and expand and put some automation in with a screen and pick line and things like that. And then continued to advance and move along. And in 2018, we ended up getting involved in our second C&D recycling facility. And then shortly thereafter in 2019, our third, and then 2020 was our fourth facility. And so, yeah, currently operate four C&D recycling facilities. We have 110-ish employees, 35 trucks, roughly.
Yep.
I've been doing this my whole life, or essentially in the garbage business my whole life, and just worked every aspect of it on the truck, in the shop, running machines, picking in the line, doing payroll, dispatching, you know, just everything that you can think of. So throughout the acquisition process that we had an opportunity to acquire a company called MBL Recycling, which was pretty much a pioneer in the industry, at least in this market. Rob and Wendy Lanzini, the name, if you've been around this for a while, may be familiar to you. They had approached us on potentially selling their business. And I brought along a friend of mine, Dan Redman, who's sitting next to me. And I had him come take a look at it. And he said, "Well, I don't know anything about this stuff, but from what I can tell, I don't know why." There's two questions. Why are they selling? And second, why aren't you buying? And then, you know, I'll let Dan tell his story in a minute, but that ended up being where we're at today, 5 years later. And we share an office here. And yeah, it's just gone kind of crazy, really. So very high level right there.
Yeah. So.
Okay, perfect. And then, Dan, do you want to do a quick introduction?
Yeah, so Dan Rodman. So, yeah, I basically partnered with Ron 5 years ago, like he said, with this acquisition of MBL. My background was in trading and investing, so came with a finance background. Basically, you know, I started out trading right out of college, and, you know, I would take my proceeds and invest in, you know, it started with condos and restaurants and all kinds of various types of small businesses over, you know, basically starting in 2001, so 24 years now. So Ron and I had always spoken about different opportunities, you know. Nothing ever came to fruition until really started in 2019, but we didn't close till 2020. And then, you know, originally it was just going to be like a silent partner kind of investor, but then I was kind of transitioning out of trading at the time and really looking for something, you know, deeper. And just mentioned to him, "Hey, are you gonna need a hand running this thing? Yeah, you're going 3x in one acquisition." And he said, "Yeah, no." And it originally was gonna be a part-time kind of come in, help out with the books, help manage some stuff, right? And then 2 weeks after we closed on leap day of 2020. And in March 17th, the whole world shut down, basically. So then it was just Ron and I in the office every single day, you know? And really, we'd have like one person rotate, you know, and a bunch of crazy stuff happened. So the rest is history. Yep.
And so what is your job title now for the company?
Yeah, I kind of, I guess you could say CFO. I handle a lot of the financial stuff. But, you know, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Job titled as owners.
Yeah, we're the owners. Like, we don't, you know, we don't have official, like, hey, you're the CEO, I'm the CFO, like, kind of thing. Like, more of a corporate environment, right? But I handle a lot of the finance side. Ron handles more of the executive, you know, decision-making side.
Operations.
Ron, let's go back to you. And can you talk a little bit about your personal background in education and kind of what led you and your father to getting into this industry and the business?
Yeah. So I guess I'll start with the fact that I'm Dutch. You'll understand that in about a minute and a half here. And I grew up in a Dutch community, essentially. And
I got to grab this book real quick.
Okay.
You see this?
Yes. Dutch Chicago.
So it's all about the garbage industry.
My family, or the community that I was part of in the 40s, 50s, 60s, really became very involved in the waste industry, waste management, the Heisinger family, the Groots, the Brands. Like, there's just a whole list of very, very influential names in the waste industry. And really, today the way waste is handled today is a result of these families kind of scaling up waste and waste management, essentially. So anyway, that's that. I went to schooling through high school, graduated high school, and I was riding bulls at the time as a I'll say semi-professional bull rider. And my dad said some opportunities to go to school for that. And he said, hey, Ron, I'll tell you two things. School is not for you, and bull riding is a dead end street. So he was at Waste Management at the time, had sold a business and was working there on a contract. And he said, let's go buy a truck. So graduated high school. I was washing windows at the time and riding bulls, and we went and bought a garbage truck and started hauling trash.
He had built and sold company. Yeah. Like, he was part of that whole waste management development.
You're right.
So yeah.
Yeah. So my dad, let's go back to that. My father dropped out of high school and started working, and always had a longing to own his own garbage truck and route. But the opportunity presented itself in when he was in 1968, I think 67 or 68, he bought a route from a guy in the city on the Gold Coast, which, if you're familiar with Chicago, it's where all the nightclubs and all those are. Mm-hmm. And so he grew that company and sold it to Waste Management when they were rolling up into the waste management we know today. And then he wanted to work for himself again, loved that, and left a few years later and started in, I think, 74, worked and sold that business in 89. That was Cleanway Disposal. And so then he left Waste Management in 97 when we started together. And that was Economy Disposal, the original Economy Disposal.
And then in terms of the scope of the operation, do you know how many tons of C&D material you're processing on an annual basis?
Yeah, like 400,000.
Okay. And do you focus on any certain C&D materials, or do you accept pretty much all C&D debris?
Yeah, all C&D debris. We just got doing some solidification. So that's going to be new for us.
All right. Let's see. Do you work primarily with construction companies or demolition contractors or other types of businesses? Both. Okay.
Yeah.
What about equipment? I know you kind of briefly touched on this at the beginning, but the different equipment and technology that are in the C&D facilities and what, particularly like anything that's innovative or, you know, specialized that you do that other people don't.
Yeah, so I don't know that we do anything that other people don't. I told you, Rob, the guy who built this facility, just about everybody who reads that magazine has probably heard about it or come through here. And so we've not added anything on. We do have a built right electric excavator. We have a destoner, a GK destoner.
We have a rotor chopper that's electric. So electric, we have a couple electric machines, which is can be unique. It's becoming probably more prevalent now, but at the time, you know, it was definitely ahead of its time, you know.
Yeah, I feel like the new things of today are like, you know, optical sorters and eddy currents and things like that, which we do not have any of that yet.
We've talked about it. We've looked at a lot of them, you know. Again, it's a math equation, right? Like, how much more material are we going to get out versus our end markets, really? You know, the end markets really dictate kind of all of that. I think one thing that's unique, though, about us is having the four sites. They're all uniquely different. They're not the same. So, like, you know, we call them stage three, stage two, stage one. Stage three facility would be, you know, the one we're sitting in right now, where you have, you know, the light heavy separator. You have, you know, a dual line system, you know, that, and it can handle a lot of volume, right? 1,000 tons a day.
Inline grinder.
Yeah, inline grinder, exactly. So that would be our stage three, like number one facility. And then, you know, we got like two, I would say, stage two facilities where they're only single line systems, Plainfield and McCook, but we've added stuff onto them, like a trommel that can help size material, you know, as well. We have shredders there where we could do some, you know, a grinder and a shredder at one, right? Where we can do different things with the material depending on the market that and what it calls for. So, you know, I think that's unique. You know, the four different sites are all at a different level. And then our lowest level site is more of a ground sort, right? We kind of touch it all a little bit, you know, but that's the site that's going to have solidification, right? So, you know, I think it's unique. We got our hands a little bit in everything. You know, if you were to say what we're going to add next, I'd probably say some sort of eddy current. Seems like the trend lately. And, you know, it seems very valuable with the price of metals and stuff right now. Yeah. So, we go to all the conferences and meetings and, you know, you get a lot of feedback from people and you get a lot of ideas. So, you know, it's just a matter of when to pull the trigger. And a lot of that's dictated by finances, right?
Well, let's talk about end markets. What do the end markets look like for the company? And how do you market the products that you're recovering?
End markets. So what is our, you know, number one thing that we're pulling out of the waste stream, and brick, I would say by weight.
Okay.
And, so as far as the wood goes, we have several outlets. We have mulch, we have animal bedding, and we make a road material and sometimes a solidification material as well, depending on what's needed. As far as procuring new stuff like that, you know, we have the mindset if we're making a good product and it's consistent, we find that people will talk and they'll find us in a sense, you know, quality is king. I don't know, maybe I shouldn't tell people that, but anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, it's probably the most, I wouldn't say difficult, but like that we have the least control of. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things, like, you know, and I've only been in the industry for 5 years, but listening to Ron, like what they used to do with wood 10 years ago is way different than what they do with it today, right? You know, shingles were hot and heavy for a while for asphalt, right? You know, in Illinois, it's not as big a demand anymore, right? So there are adjustments, but you know, when one market closes, another one opens, right? Like, and there's always people kind of innovating and figuring it out. But again, I would say the key, and if you talk to anybody across the U.S., the trucking side. So, You still, mm-hmm. it still has to be pretty localized, right? You're not going to ship the stuff across the country because the trucking fees and freight are so high.
You may find a guy in Nebraska that'll pay you $10 a ton for the wood, but it costs you $30 to truck it there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, it doesn't work.
Yeah, we had a really good mulch outlet that was just got too far away, right? So we had to localize that market, you know. Yeah, it happens, right? So, and it's constantly moving. It's probably one of our biggest challenges, but the most fun too when you figure out a new outlet or, you know.
So then the brick and concrete, that mostly gets crushed to make, you know, an aggregate product. Also, mm-hmm. they'll use some of the brick stuff that's not able to be used for an aggregate product as a road-based material or a fill material for backfilling. And we bale cardboard and pull all kinds of metals, you know, aluminum, copper, steel. We have multiple magnets on the belts. What other?
So one that we're kind of excited about, it really hasn't come to fruition yet, but it's a hot topic in the industry, so I'll bring it up. Gypsum. So, you know, it was kind of an eyesore. People were trying to get it out of the waste stream because of the smell and some of the landfill issues that we had in Illinois. But, you know, now, you know, with these clean cutoffs and what we're noticing is a lot of those, they hang drywall all at the same time. It definitely is a viable product. You know, it's got to be processed a little bit more. So we did have one outlet that was taking it and, you know, it had to be clean cutoffs. And, but there is a new facility, USA Gypsum facility, that's moving into our area that is going to be able to process it even more. And I feel like the next 5 years, that's one that's going to become really good for us. So it's not quite there yet, but we see, you know, they're using it in other states and they're building a facility here. So we do feel like that's going to be something of the future, you know?
Yep.
Talking about kind of the regional market, what do you think, how would you describe sort of the Midwestern regional market in terms of challenges and opportunities that might not be present in other parts of the country?
I don't think this is appropriate for the magazine, but we have a friend who's a legend in the industry, and he said, if you can do waste, the waste business in Chicago, you can do any business anywhere.
Yeah.
There's and that goes back to the old days where everyone was really good at what they did, and there was a bunch of really small mom and pops, you know, so the competition was fierce, and everyone was really good. It wasn't service wasn't an issue. Everyone was getting good service. Yeah. I would say
you owned your block too, and everybody stuck to it, right? There was you owned your sections. Yeah. But even today, you know, I would say in our area, one of the things is we have all the big players. Like there's not one competitor that's not here. So, you know, you definitely you have to be on your game. Yeah. You know. Yeah.
And I would say what has happened in the market, at least in our space, is there's been so much consolidation.
Oh, good point.
And you've lost a lot of mid-sized mom and pop shops, I'll call them, or family businesses. And so that family touch is gone. You know, there's not, it's a lot of corporate call centers and different things like that. When you call our office, if it doesn't get picked up in 2 to 3 rings, there's something going wrong. Like the phone is picked up in 1, maybe 2 rings.
We have all the stats. Our average pickup time is like less than 4 seconds.
Wow.
So I'd say that's rare in today's day and age, you know. Now you do. And so I would say something that's unique too about our market is, you know, we're also union, right? So this is a union heavy city, but a lot of our competition, so the 1 and 2 truck, 3 truck operations are non-union. So we have a little bit of that tension, right? Where we need to charge a higher price because our labor's more, but yet our competition doesn't have to do that. So we have to give them a good product, right? We cannot fail on customer service because why are they going to pay more to come to us when they can just take any, you know, the average guy off the street with 2 trucks who's really cheap, right? Yeah. So that, you know, that is unique. You got the big powerhouse companies, but yet you still got the non-union 1 and 2 truck guys, which, and you know what, honestly, coming from the trading industry, which is very free market, right? You show up and And if you're battling against each other, and if the best man wins. And I kind of like that about the garbage industry. Like, you got guys who are one truck operations that are able to compete with waste management, right? And you got every size in between, and we're kind of in the middle, right? So it's neat to see. It's very democratic, you know? It's an American dream, yeah. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. What would you say is the business philosophy?
First of all, the number one is taking care of the customer. It's real easy to say, it's hard to do. Okay. Answer the phone.
Quickly.
Right. Immediately. It's a person, a familiar voice that you're talking to. Second, make the customer feel like they're appreciated, right? Hospitality. How does a customer feel? The difference between hospitality and customer service. Customer service, yeah, that's real, like, black and white. A, B, C, D, I did this, and this. Customer service is color. How did that customer feel when they interacted with us, right? The second key point is providing a place where people want to work. Taking care of your team. Don't ask anyone to do a job you're not willing to do yourself. You know, servant leadership. I don't know. We could go on and on. It's just, you know, that I think for us.
Well, and yeah, and then they'll treat the customer. You treat them well, and they're going to treat the customer well.
It passes like, right on through.
You can see we're wearing hoodies and, like, you know, pork boots. We're whatever we need to do. If we need to deliver a toilet, like, it's not like, oh, I'm the finance guy. I have to sit behind my computer. Yeah. I do get trapped behind my computer. But, you know, we're not willing. Everybody's willing to do. We don't like titles. We want everybody to be on a equal playing field, you know. And then the other one is family, right?
And giving back to our community. Huge part of what we do is taking care of
We don't like to talk about it, but we support a lot of local ministries and charities through what we do. It's very important to us. We feel it's not appropriate to always talk about, right? Because you're trying to shine a light. We do it because we believe it's the right thing to do, not because we want some
sort of
celebrity
at all.
Yeah. But we also want our employees to feel that it's more than just what happens in this office, and it's more to stuff our pockets, right? It's you know, when you feel like you have something, a mission that's greater than, you know, yourself, you feel like it's a better place to work, right? Like, you know, and so it's good.
All right. Well, so in terms of looking to the future, where would you say the company goes from here? What I know we talked about, you know, some of the maybe innovations in metal, you know, eddy currents and things like that you're looking at. But what are you thinking in terms of expansions, upgrades, innovations that you're considering?
Yeah. We laugh because we get this question all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
We always like. As you can see, we like to do things a little differently. Like, we like to focus on the day-to-day and what we can control. And we kind of, we have deep faith, right? So we let the Lord take care of everything else. And he's brought us to heights that we can never put a target on. But what I always say is, you don't throw a dart at a wall. You throw it at a dartboard, right? So you do have to have a target. So go ahead,
Ron. Yeah, so I think if you go back to the customer service piece, and you go back to taking care of your teammates and providing an excellent workplace along with giving back to the community, watch out. It just looked like a rocket. People are desperate for that today. They want to pick up the phone and they want to talk to somebody on the phone.
Yeah.
They want to see a driver that's smiling and says, hey, how can I help you today? Or whatever the case may be, they're desperate for it.
Yeah.
And I think
it's such an impersonal society today,
you know, and if we don't, our job is what we say oftentimes is we just don't want to fall on our face. Like, just keep us up and keep us moving, baby. Cause watch out.
What do you always say? If they're calling us cause they have a problem.
Yeah, right?
They have to get rid of something.
Yeah.
Whatever. We don't want to make that problem worse. Right. Yeah. They're calling us for solutions. So, and we want to be yes people. We want to say yes. Like, even if we can't handle it. So, like, we get weird calls all the time about stuff people want to get rid of. Right. And it's like, well, no, we don't take that. We can't under our permit, but hey, here's a list of numbers, or hey, call your local city. You know, they take batteries or this or whatever, electronic devices, whatever it is. You know, we want to be a solution. We don't want to just hang up the phone and be like, you know, and we think that goes a long way. You know, to give some finite numbers on it, really, we've kind of gone almost 10x in 5 years, which is pretty amazing. You know, that's including the first acquisition that was 3x. You know,
that's a very
powerful thing. That's a lot, you know. And do I see us going 10x over the next 5 years? No way. It's got to slow down, right? So, and we're running out of targets. But I would say in the Chicago area, so just to give you a little bit of rough numbers, because it's always good to have a little bit of rough numbers. When we had a union contract that came up and we had to, you know, negotiate. And, you know, we looked at our competition that's non-union. I think it was 60 trucks or no, sorry. Wait,
no, 52 companies.
52 companies, over 200 trucks, and that equated to like 2,000, 2,500 boxes or something like that. So all those companies are potential targets, really, because you know, a lot of them are young people aren't really getting into the industry. A lot of them are pushing in their 50s and 60s, right? There's not really necessarily a succession plan. You know, they already dump at our facilities, a lot of them. So they would be a nice tuck-in. We would make them union, right? Bring them in. Chicago, it's getting harder and harder to get work if you're non-union, right? So there are a lot of potential still out there. I mean, if you think about that, 200 trucks and, you know, I think it's like 4,000 boxes. Yeah, it's even more than that, right? I forgot. We did some calculations. So there is potential still, you know.
In the market.
Yeah. So, and what I always, you know, Ron's got a great reputation. His family's been around forever. And like I said, don't be an ass. His phone never stops ringing.
That's just this market. We have not expanded outside of the state, which is something that we would love to do. We would love to be in a neighboring state or in the Midwest or in the South. You know, there's really, it would be wonderful.
Yeah, we talk about diversification, right? So there's two ways to diversify. You get out of the state, out of your region, right? And we've looked at opportunities. And then the other thing is like expanding we're in temporary services right now. We do have compactor work, but mostly temporary, right? They got to call us, right? So why not get into some more subscription work, right? Whether that's compactors or, you know, front loaders or, you know, whatever. I mean, there's a lot, you know, Ron was in traditional garbage forever in his family. Like if an opportunity came up, maybe we'd expand into that, you know? So, you know, we don't close we always take the meeting is what we say. You know, you never know what's going to come through that door. And, you know, luckily nowadays, you know, financing and, you know, with PE firms and banks are very aggressive. So, you know, it's pretty not easy to get a deal done. But if you pay your bills and you have a good track record, there are some tailwinds behind you when it comes to financing, you know.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us for today's podcast. We hope you'll tune back in for a future episode.